Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
Good morning and welcome to the Early Morning Late Show. I'm actually Carmen LaBerge, sitting in for Bill Arnold, who is out this week. So welcome this morning. Good morning to you. If it's cold where you are, then you are probably in America because it's just cold today. So we are glad that you are with us. We have a great morning planned. And I just wanted to mention, starting off here, that the fakies were last night. That followed up Senator Jeff Flake taking to the Senate floor in an attempt to stress the importance of the linkage between truth and democracy, which is certainly an admirable goal. But I think that you can speak the truth in ways that honor God and in ways that honor our democracy without necessarily throwing somebody else under the bus. So when you're trying to make your point today about the truth, and when you are trying to speak the truth into the lives of others, let's try to do so in ways that build up other people and don't require tearing someone else down. The truth certainly matters. In fact, the truth matters a great deal. You might recall a very brief conversation that Jesus actually had about the truth with Pontius Pilate. They talked about the importance of truth the night before Jesus was crucified, or actually it probably was the morning of his crucifixion. So Rome was, as you recall, no real democracy. Caesar was worshipped as divine. He was hailed as king. 5 days prior to his betrayal by Judas and arrest in the Garden of Gethsemane and this trial before Pontius Pilate where this conversation about the truth took place, Jesus had actually ridden into the capital city of Israel, Jerusalem, in fulfillment of promises that had been made by God through the prophets hundreds of years earlier. Matthew tells us all about it in chapter 21 of his gospel. You'll remember that people spread their cloaks on the road. They cut branches from the trees. They spread them on the road. Crowds went before Jesus and followed behind him, shouting, "Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest." And when he entered Jerusalem, the whole city was stirred up. So there's a lot going on in this story. And when asked, "Who is this?" the crowds answered, "This is the prophet Jesus from Nazareth in Galilee." So and then you fast forward to this time that Jesus has before Pilate, when Pilate says, "Are you a king? Are you?" And Jesus says, "Well, I'm a king, but my kingdom's not of this world." And this conversation then moves into a conversation about the truth. I want you to think about that for a moment. I want you to think about kingdom realities. I want you to think about this world and its relationship to the kingdom of God. I want you to think about yourself not only as a citizen of the kingdom of heaven and a citizen of the kingdom right here and now, but your obligation to the truth, the transcendent virtue of truth, transcendental virtue of truth in this kingdom as you represent the kingdom of God. That's actually the conversation that we're having in our culture, whether or not you recognize it. That's the question before us as a people. So we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, this is actually going to be the subject of our conversation with Dr. Adam Carrington. He's a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. And we're going to talk about how Christians are citizens both here of the U.S. and citizens of the Kingdom of Heaven and what that means. Hey friends, welcome back. This is the Early Morning Late Show. I am filling in for Bill Arnold. My name is Carmen LaBerge. I am joined now by Dr. Adam Carrington. He's a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. You hear his voice frequently here on Faith Radio. And so we want to welcome Dr. Carrington back for a conversation today. Adam, welcome to the Early Morning Late Show.
Glad to be here, Carmen, and glad to get to talk to you this morning.
Well, likewise, you and I could talk about so many things this morning. We could talk about what the president said. We could talk about what he was heard to say, what he has now denied saying. We could talk about the reality of living in the week of the celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. and his impact on our culture, and yet our ongoing need for racial reconciliation. We could talk about the relationships of men and women. So I would really just like to start with you by asking, what are the students on a campus like Hillsdale actually talking about? What are the conversations taking place amongst students, at a school where you guys are intentionally trying to bring the mind of Christ to bear on the matters of the day and equip young people in all kinds of, ultimate vocations, but really equipping them to be ambassadors of Jesus Christ in every aspect of the culture. So talk with us this morning, just starting out with, what are your students talking about?
That's a great question, and actually it's appropriate because classes just started yesterday here. And I think that, many of our students, a large majority, are devout Christians, and they are trying to live out what does it mean to be citizens of the kingdom of God and also citizens of this country. And I think you mentioned a whole number of things, and I think that the conversations that are consistently happening, that all of the issues you brought on bring to the fore, are questions of what does it mean to be a man and a woman. I think that's a fundamental question that's being brought up now with a lot of the Me Too movement, and how should men and women interact? At the same time, you brought up racial reconciliation. I think that is a question where what does the gospel and what does the idea of the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, how do we actually live out those political and religious principles? And I think that anew, this question of, not so much what the president said, but what do we do about the issues like immigration in light of that? I think they're talking about all those things. So I think that's a nice way to bring up that question.
Now, I feel like I know something about Hillsdale that other people may not know, and that is that the courses that are available to students are actually also available to other people. So if we've got listeners right now who are thinking to themselves, wow, I wish I knew what the relationship is between, what God says in Genesis in terms of every human being made in the image of God and what the Declaration of Independence says. Maybe there's a course on the Constitution offered by, a school like Hillsdale that I could engage in. Can you just tell people, how they could engage the kind of information that your students are engaging on campus?
Yes, and I think that's a great thing that we do, that in addition to who we serve on campus, we try to make civic education available to any American who's willing to take the effort to find it. And it's all free, and you can take many of the core classes that students take here on the U.S. Constitution, but also classes on the presidency, classes on the Supreme Court, classes on literature and history as well. And if you go to the Hillsdale's website, you can find on there where you can take these courses. They're taught by professors. You get readings. You get to see the professors interact with other interviewers. And you do get what we're hoping to provide is a kind of civic education to the country, not just to the students who come through here. And I think that we've had hundreds of thousands of people already do that, and I think it's something that I really admired that the school did before I came here, and I'm glad that I've actually been able to take part in one of those courses as well.
So we're talking with Dr. Adam Carrington, and he is a professor of politics at Hillsdale College. I'm your host this morning. My name is Carmen LaBerge, sitting in for Bill Arnold here on the Early Morning Late Show. All right, Adam, let's jump into a conversation about these divisions that we experience in the U.S. today. I think that, people draw those dividing lines in all kinds of places. There's a highly partisan survey even just out today that, that folks are talking about. You noted to me in an email a recent piece in the New York Times that posed an interesting question about where the greater divide might be at this time among Americans. Is it the division of race, class, or gender? Tell us a little bit about what that article says, but then also the conclusions that you draw from that.
Sure. And the article, there was some research done that was much deeper in amount of people spoken to and how many questions they asked than a normal poll. About 15,000, or I know it was much more than that. A large group of people were asked about their opinions, and it was interesting that Since the 2016 election, the divides over between race and class that seemed to so consume a lot of our discussions in 2016 and beyond haven't changed a whole lot. They're still there. There still are, you know, battles, you know, between people who are called elitist and people who are called the common man, differences among racial characteristics. But the one that seems to have gotten more intense is actually gender, that the differences, the gender gap in how men and women are perceiving politics and looking at it and then looking at each other seems to have gotten worse. And that's what this New York Times article concluded. That's what I think the data shows. And I would at least say, you know, I think there's a lot to that, that especially with all the sexual harassment cases that are coming out, with some of the divides that we've seen in rhetoric with the president and Congress, I think that shows that there's a lot that we need to ask about human anthropology. And you talked about Genesis, about the image of God. What does it mean to be male and female in the image of God, and what duties do we owe to each other? And I think that what it really shows is we actually are having trouble even knowing how to have that conversation and diagnose the problems of not having that conversation, which is a pretty fundamental problem when you don't even know how to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Adam, let's continue this conversation in just a minute. We got to take a quick break. Friends, you're listening to the Early Morning Late Show on Faith Radio. We'll be right back. Hey, good morning, friends. I'm Carmen LaBerge, sitting in for Bill Arnold here on the Early Morning Late Show. I am joined by Dr. Adam Carrington, professor of politics at Hillsdale College. We're having conversations about identity and how it is that we're going to engage in the conversations of the day that are going on in the culture related to who we are as men and women, who we are as people of various hues and shades, and certainly as people of varying opinions about things. Like, how is it that we are going to engage in the conversations of the day, not just to make our point or not just to speak our truth, but to actually speak the truth into a culture that is really dying to hear it? So, Dr. Carrington, again, thank you for being with us this morning. Let's continue the conversation. How would you counsel someone who wants to engage in the conversation about men and women and how it is that we're going to relate to each other in the culture?
I think it begins with, you referenced this earlier, and then I think I did as well. First with the Genesis account about the image of God, that if human beings really all do bear the image of God, then there is an inherent dignity that they possess and therefore an inherent respect of their opinions, of their viewpoints that must be held. At the same time, that kind of respect demands critical engagement, that there is civility, but civility is not relativism. And that what we need to look to are the kind of a way to, you know, whimsically articulate the timeless truths that we do see, say, in the Declaration of Independence about the equality of human beings, or that we do see in these other in Scripture and other places. And I think that that's a good starting point. You need to know the truth, but you also need to have a respect for those for whom you're engaging as other human beings. And I think that's probably the best starting point, even though many other people won't accept that starting point.
Well, and so in my experience, I even sometimes have to take a step back beyond what I understand and have received and would articulate as the truth found in Genesis about the equality of all people made in the image of God. In a conversation, I would seek to establish whether or not that was common ground, you know, with my conversation partner, because I may not be able to go there. And so sometimes my entry point might actually be the Declaration of Independence as a starting point for conversation, because it can be a common ground. And then I can say, well, where do you think those ideas come from? Like, what, you know, these are the Creator is referenced in that document. And so I can get to the Bible through the Declaration of Independence in order to have that conversation with another person who may not be willing to start with the Bible as a, you know, as a shared authority.
Yeah, well, and even the Bible, I think, says that, you know, the heavens declare the glory of God. If you look at Romans 1, it talks about how much we naturally know not only God's existence, but that we know something of right and wrong, that there is implanted in our hearts a law. And I think that that law is then spoken of in other documents in political thought, like the Declaration, but also in the writings of the founders elsewhere as the law of nature. And I think that appealing to that isn't antithetical to Scripture. I think appealing to that is just showing that God reveals himself in more than one way. And however one can start that conversation, I think, you know, whatever your entry point is, I think as long as it's trying to point toward that kind of truth, I think it can be effective. And I think it can be effective because people are really starved for something solid, something true. Whereas a lot of the arguments against these points rest on pretty shaky foundations. They rest on foundations of being on the right side of history, of being on the side of whatever, you know, changing truth is in style now. And I think pointing to some of those foundations, I think people may not immediately love the conclusions, but they might find the surety or the chance at surety more refreshing.
I think it's astonishing that we have reached the place in the culture where we're having conversations about right and wrong, where we're having conversations about, you know, actually legitimate boundaries for sexual behavior and sexual expression. And in a time when everyone else is saying, hey, you should be able to do whatever you want to do and you can have your own truth and you should speak your own truth. And in reality, you and I would both know that is not possible. It's not possible for everyone to define truth in their own image and define right and wrong in their own image and to get whatever they want whenever they want, sort of law of the jungle mentality, when in reality, you and I would recognize people are yearning for what is ultimately natural law. And in order to have that conversation, we have to acknowledge the reality of a lawgiver. It's just amazing to me the way the cultural conversation moves in these days toward God. It moves toward a conversation where God must be engaged.
Well, I think we can't help but be worshiping beings, but it's what we worship. And we'll worship something, whether it's an idol or whether it's the true God. And I think, you know, bringing that into politics, I think we need to balance the idea that we're made in the image of God with also the idea that we're fallen. You could turn around the image of God and say, well, if we're made in God's image, then we should be able to do whatever we want because, you know, that'll be imaging God. And I think we've forgotten that human beings have been disordered tragically, and that part of restoring that image of God is learning to govern oneself and learning to be rightly ordered in what you desire and want, and knowing that that's not always going to naturally be the case, that that this outside law is needed because our internal desires are sometimes disordered. In fact, that's what a lot of the reason for government is. If you look at Federalist 51, the founders got this. They said, if men were angels, there'd be no need for government. So I think that recognizing that is also something we've misunderstood. In some ways, the culture today devalues humans and overvalues humans at the same time. We devalue their humanity. We overvalue their morality intrinsically.
Hmm. Okay, I think we should write that down. Professor, that is an excellent observation. And I, as you were talking about the need for us to learn to govern ourselves, the thought I had was, okay, as a Christian, I do have to submit as a citizen of a particular nation sometimes to a government that is populated by people who do not govern themselves well. And so can you give us some encouragement this morning about, you know, how do we live as self-governed individuals in the context of a culture where individuals who are in elected positions of leadership are not people whose morality we admire?
I think one thing we, as far as encouragement, is that we are still a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Even if the government doesn't always do that, elections still matter. So there still is consent. So I would encourage people that they can demand that of their leaders. They can demand that that occur, and in demanding it, can possibly bring about change. At the same time, I would encourage that we do have a lot of freedom, that even if our leaders aren't doing so, we in our communities, in our families, in our churches can show what, you know, what a self-governing life, how that can actually be better, not only for one personally, but for one's society. And third, just remember that while our citizenship matters, ultimately, you know, I would say as a Christian that God is in control and He is bringing things together according to His plan. That doesn't mean that times can't be hard, but it also means that we can sort of trust who is in control, even if we then have to recognize that it isn't always us.
Dr. Adam Carrington, thank you so much for joining us today on the Early Morning Late Show. Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. You guys can check it out at hillsdale.edu. All right, friends, we are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
If you turn the volume up, you might be able to use the carpool lane. See, it pays to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Welcome back to the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Carmen LaBerge, sitting in for Bill Arnold, who is out this week. Good day, sunshine. I don't know about you. The sun is not actually yet up where I am. And so if the sun is up where you are, then good morning, sunshine. Otherwise, I think we can all be confident that by God's grace, the sun, we will experience it as rising any minute now. And so be the light of Christ out there in the world today. That's actually your little personal mission statement for the day. Go be shiny. That'll be my encouragement. Whatever the conversation of the day is, whatever is going on, you go out there and you go be shiny. Shine as a light of Christ, even in the midst of what is oftentimes a dark and perverse generation. All right, my little news item of the day that I don't want us to miss is that tomorrow is the March for Life in Washington, D.C. There are lots of smaller marches in cities and towns across the country as well. So if you are participating in a March for Life, I have an idea for you. Why don't you go ahead and sign up today for the Live Free Challenge at myfaithradio.com, and you could use your March for Life miles to actually help restore the freedom and dignity of a fellow human being who has been trafficked. Human trafficking is a pro-life issue. Let us not ever forget that. So for Marching for Life certainly started as a way for the reborn to take up the cause of the preborn. But pro-life advocates are actually folks who understand that life issues are broad and deep and even systemic. So we're talking about human dignity and what it means that every human being, no matter where they're born or under what circumstances they live, bears the image of the Creator God. And so let me encourage you to march for life. Let me encourage you to be a person who takes a stand for life and participates in the Live Free Challenge. Again, you can check that out at myfaithradio.com. But there's something that you can do today. If you're snowed in, if you are, you're thinking to yourself, hey, I'd like to know more, you can actually go to evangelicals.life and you can participate today in an event that's taking place in Washington, D.C. called Evangelicals for Life. It's co-hosted by Focus on the Family and the ERLC, which is the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Church. And you can check it all out at evangelicals.life. All right, when I come back, I'm going to be having a conversation with Kim Cotola of Cradle My Heart, and we're going to be talking about life issues. This is Carmen LaBerge. We'll be right back with the Early Morning Late Show.
People are turned off by the church, and that will continue to be the case if we're all form and no power. This is Jim Garlow. I'm a pastor, and I can clearly see that. So here's my point. If we merely have a form of religion without the power of God, the church will exist. But for what? Look at most church calendars, and you'll see announcements of upcoming events. a music group putting on a concert, rummage sales, quilting parties, leadership seminars, announcements you can read in any publication that calendars events. How are we different? What happened to the church? The book of Acts records the apostles healing the sick, casting out demons, and leading people to Christ. That's what I signed up for as a pastor. It's the kind of team I want to be on. It's the kind of church I would want to lead. How about it? People are turned off by the church, and that will continue to be the case if we're all form and no power. Go to jimgarlow.com. There's much more.
Welcome back to the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Carmen LaBurge, sitting in for Bill Arnold. I am joined now with a regular guest here on the program, Kim Cotola of Cradle My Heart. You already know her. And we're going to have the privilege of talking today about the subject matter of life and about the subject matter of abortion. And so, Kim, welcome back to the Early Morning Late Show.
Hi, Carmen. How are you?
Well, I'm well. Thank you for joining us. I understand that you are under a curfew in your town.
We had 2 inches of snow in suburban Atlanta, and they seriously, in our suburb and a neighboring one, put out a curfew that no one was to be on the streets after 6 p.m. Because I don't know.
So I live.
It's a little cold, little slippery, but it's not. I don't think martial law is
exactly. I love that the city issued a curfew. So I live just west of Nashville, Tennessee, and our kids haven't been in school for a week because we got an inch of snow.
Right.
And so it's paralysis. So I know that those listening today in Duluth and in Madison and in Fargo, I mean, they're laughing right now and they're thinking, you know, people in the North are just of a stronger constitution. That's what they're thinking.
Well, being in the South from the North, it's a culture shock of a different kind.
All right, Kim, let's talk about this very difficult issue. It's hard to talk about because you and I both recognize that any conversation about abortion among Christians includes the reality that many people who are listening are post-abortive. They are people who have this as a part of their life experience. And so I know that we recognize we tread very carefully into the subject matter area, and we recognize and acknowledge that it's certainly not an unforgivable sin, but it is a serious concern, and we need to talk about it as such. So just lead us into this conversation about why so many women have abortions if they know it's wrong.
Well, I wrote about this recently for Christian Post, and it was really a response to someone who had challenged me on an online forum, saying that, you know, when I admitted that I had an abortion for a different topic in print, I said that, you know, I take full responsibility for that, although it wasn't fully my choice. Now, this person said, well, unless you were conscripted, unless someone had a gun to your head, it was your choice. You weren't coerced. And I wish that it were that simple, but there are a lot of subtleties in play as to why many, many women experience abortion against their will. And when that happens, that adds such a weight of shame, because we know that we've taken part in something that's dishonorable, even if we didn't choose it. And it may trigger guilt because we didn't do everything we could have to stop it. So part of the recovery, Carmen, has got to be learning accountability. What was my part? And I think we can only do that and process that in an abortion recovery setting. I'm so grateful for the one that I found through the Conquerors Group in the Twin Cities. There are abortion recovery ministries in almost every pregnancy help center. And it's a really delicate thread to try to unravel that. And people who are pro-life, sometimes in their lack of understanding, contribute to the self-condemnation that people, women and men, feel after abortion. And it often is something that happens against our will.
So it seems to me that in the culture where we're now having this conversation about all kinds of unwanted sexual advances or all kinds of unwanted, you know, the male-female relationship in general, and And I hear people saying, well, you know, these were things that I did not appreciate. I did not want to have happen. I was coerced. And yet what I hear you saying is when it even comes to something as significant, I mean, life altering, not just for the child, but life altering for the woman, that there are still people in our culture who imagine that the woman really does control that decision making and controls every aspect of not only of that pregnancy, but of the decision of whether or not that child is going to live or die. Can you just describe for us some situations and some scenarios so people can understand what you're talking about when we're talking about women who really are not making that choice fully for themselves?
And I appreciate you bringing it up because I think often this pushback, as I said, comes from within the pro-life community, people who are understandably devastated by the loss of life that happens in every abortion. I am with you. I love the way you said it, Carmen. The reborn standing in the gap for the preborn. That's beautifully put. But what happens, for example, if a pastor tells his young counselee to quietly abort to save the family's reputation, and she tells no one else, and she fully has subjected herself to his leadership in her life? What if everyone that she consulted advocated for abortion? No one offered any alternative. Was she really choosing it freely? If the man in the situation refused to carry out prior promises and he withdrew financial or other material support, did the woman choose abortion freely? If she's a teenager and her parents said they were going to put her on the street, was that a choice? If violence was threatened or enacted, did the woman choose that abortion freely? And wow, you know, drawing this line between trafficking and abortion, we have no idea how abortion enables trafficking, because the pimp, the handler, takes the pregnant woman who is victimized, gets the abortion to put her back in service. Abortion absolutely facilitates and enables trafficking. And in all of these situations, by a legal definition, this is coercion. Coercion happens when you are forced to act against your own free will, whether it would be through physical force or through psychological manipulation, or as I said, through financial manipulation. There are many, many ways that coercion can actually happen.
All right, friends, the conversation that I'm having is with Kim Cotola of Cradle My Heart. We're talking about difficult issues, but we're doing so in a lead up to the March for Life tomorrow. If you want more equipping on all of these subjects, I want you to go to evangelicals.life today, and you can participate in the live stream of the event happening in D.C. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with Kim and continue our conversation here on the Early Morning Late Show. I'm your guest host, Carmen LaBerge. Well, friends, welcome back to the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Carmen LaBerge, sitting in for Bill Arnold. My guest in this segment is Kim Cotola. You know her. She's of Cradle My Heart. And we are having conversations that are difficult to have, but really important in terms of each and every one of us who recognizes our responsibility as pro-life Christians to engage in the conversation about abortion, not only in ways that honor Jesus, which absolutely we want to be we want to be certain to do, but in ways that that honor the dignity of the women involved as well. And one of the things that Kim already addressed and talked about is the access that people have to abortion recovery ministries. And so let me encourage you today to find out about the abortion recovery ministries in your own communities so that you're equipped. You're equipped to actually come alongside women who have had an abortion, and you're able to offer them a place of hope and healing in your own community through the wider church. So, Kim, thank you for joining me here on the Early Morning Late Show today. Let's talk about the way in which Americans often speak of abortion as an issue related to women's health, and how babies in the womb have been demoted to being described as fetuses, and then even demoted further to just being described as tissue. Talk with us about what's going on there.
Well, yeah, Women's Health is a pretty widely read publication, and their online version is womenshealthmag.com, and they have an article posted right now from the editors. It's not attributed to a single author. It just says by the editors of Women's Health, and it's the title is Five Things Every Woman Needs to Know About Abortions. And so it's a very pro-abortion piece. It's, you know, helping you understand how common abortion is. They quote the CDC number of over 664,000 abortions. And, of course, that's an underestimate because the CDC doesn't require reporting and many states don't report, including California. But they do tell us that one third of abortions now happen at home. And they tell us, Carmen, that, what happens is you're given medication and you go home and then the pregnancy tissue is passed. I love that you said that this is a demotion from child to fetus. Now not even fetus. We're talking about pregnancy tissue. I have not really heard that phrase used in that way before this article, and I've read a lot about abortion, pro and con, through the years. But it says after 10 weeks, abortions occur in clinics. And forgive me, this is somewhat graphic, but they say if you're past the first trimester, other medical tools may be used in addition to a suction vacuum to make sure all of the pregnancy tissue is removed. Mm. Pregnancy tissue. It usually happens, the removal usually happens in 5 to 10 minutes. Well, what is pregnancy tissue? I'll tell you what it is. It's an innocent human being. And, you know, some imagination may be required, but it's based on science, not on wishful thinking. Embryology textbooks tell us that life begins at conception and that this is a human being. And that even in that one cell organism, that when the sperm and egg fertilize to create that new life, that one cell organism, that is what a human body looks like at that stage of development. That's a human body. That's not pregnancy tissue. This is a huge deception. It's a huge misdirection on the part of Women's Health magazine. And it's to me, very despicable that they would write under a banner of science and withhold scientific information from their readers.
Mm. So, Kim, first of all, I think you should write a response piece, five things women really need to know about abortion. And so that'll be my encouragement to you. I'll be looking forward to that at Cradle My Heart and other places. But I think that when we engage this conversation, particularly as Christians in a culture where we are pro-life and in many cases we are living in a context where the word itself, abortion, is being somehow redefined as good. I'm thinking about an ad campaign underway in Ohio where, you know, they have these abortion is at billboards. And then there's, you know, like supposedly like a fill in the blank, but they have filled in the blank. And one of those says like abortion is a parenting decision. As soon as you have said it's a parenting decision, have you not acknowledged that the person carrying the baby is a mother? And when you use the word mother, is a child not implied? Like, isn't there a deception going on, even by the pro-abortion community, to redefine this as fundamentally good?
Oh, that has been underway for a long time, Carmen. And I heard a story recently. A woman was, I think she was at a bridal shower, but she had recently given birth. And so she was, you know, people were asking for pictures. She was passing her phone. And one of the women at the party said to her, "Oh, I had an abortion. And yeah, that's about how old my baby would be," and was trying to bond over this shared experience, which she said it was horrifying for her as a mother, having been through the pregnancy. You know, you can get the pregnancy app these days, Carmen, that totally puts the lie to pregnancy tissue. They'll tell you your baby at 2 weeks is this size, and they'll give you a picture of fetal development. I mean, anyone who is well-informed knows that this is deception. And preterm has a profit motive in trying to put a positive spin on abortion. And the ways in which they're doing it are trading on the ignorance of women who wish that it were a simpler decision, who wish that they could not be carrying a child, who wish that another life was not involved in that pregnancy. Mm. And I think there's a disconnect that happens. I know it happened for me as a young woman pre-internet when I had an abortion at 23. I knew the facts of life. I know how pregnancy occurs. But there was a divide in my thinking between pregnancy and a life. This pregnancy involved me, you know, and somehow when I was told that I could end a pregnancy and continue with my life as it had gone on before, I somehow split off that pregnancy involved another human being until it was too late for me to do anything about that fatal mistake. And it was absolutely wrong thinking, and it was absolutely what I wanted to believe, but I was led to believe that by those who had a motive in collecting that fee to end that life.
Kim, thank you so much for your honesty, for your vulnerability, for your ministry, and for your willingness to enter into this particular conversation of our day in order that others might be more fully equipped. So, friends, it's Kim Cottola from Cradle My Heart, and you can check all of that out at her website. We got to go here to a quick break. I'm Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back on the Early Morning Late Show. Hey, good morning. I'm Carmen LaBurge. This is the Early Morning Late Show. Welcome back. All right, friends, we have talked today about tomorrow's March for Life in Washington, D.C. I have encouraged you to engage online at evangelicals.life. You can actually live stream and participate in the entire event no matter where you are. And friends, let me encourage you today to be considering participating in the Live Free Challenge. During the month of February, you could join hundreds of other people as we walk, run, and ride to raise money to rescue and rehabilitate victims of human trafficking. And so, friends, let me encourage you to use your March for Life tomorrow to log some miles in the Live Free Challenge. This is Carmen LaBurge. This is the Early Morning Late Show, and we'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.